Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days.
I mean,
days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
Can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala, New York podcast.
Hi, I'm Dave. You might remember me from the elite university I graduated from. Since then, I've been hosting a very prestigious meditation podcast. That's right. Credentials, everybody. Credentials. Where'd you go to school? How much do you make? We all love these questions, don't we? And that is the topic of today's talk. This was recorded at our weekly Dharma gathering a couple of months ago, actually in late September. This was a great talk by Natalie Baker, who, as you know, is a regular contributor to the podcast. She is the founder of Buddhist Psychotherapy New York, and she is a licensed psychotherapist and certified neurofeedback trainer in New York. She's been teaching and practicing meditation for many years, and it's always great to hear her. But before we get to that, I do want to mention that the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York is presenting its introductory weekend intensive. It's called Shambhala Training Weekend 1, and it's happening the weekend of January 13th. Mark your calendars. Maybe you're making New Year's resolutions. Maybe you're rebelling, making New Year's resolutions. In either case, January 13th, 14th, and 15th is a weekend in which the New York Shambhala Center will be presenting this program. And teaching, co-teaching it, I should say, will be Shastri Ethan Nickturn and, yes, his father, David Nickturn. The Nickturn boys are back. The Nickturn men, it depends when you get them, whether they're more like boys or men. But they are great teachers, a wealth of experience between the two of them. Generations of meditation for the taking. That is the weekend of January 13th. For more information and to register, go to ny.shambhala.org. Click the link on the homepage. For Shambhala Training Weekend 1, Feel Human Again. And now, Natalie Baker is here.
And I thought this was a good topic, given last night's debates, where it was all about credentials. Credentials to lead this country. And New Yorkers are very interested in credentials as well. Professional credentials, skills. It often comes up when people are dating. It's a tough city in that respect. And then we have our own personal sense of our credentials and whether we think we internally have enough, if we have the right to take up space in the world, to ask for things from other people. How much value do we inherently have versus how much value we have based on our professional accomplishments, what school we went to, who our friends are, where we grew up, which neighborhood we live in. That's one that New Yorkers like to use. And it's a very important topic when it comes to the spiritual path and the practice of meditation. when we talk about credentials on the level of our meditation practice and our spiritual path, we're not just talking about it on the level of our narrative, our story about ourselves, which is typically how we think about what we're made of, is that we have a running narrative about ourselves. Oh, I'm like this, and I'm good at these things and not good at those things, and I have to work on this part of me and try better to give up caffeine and sugar. But how Trungpa Rinpoche, who is the Tibetan Buddhist teacher who started the Shambhala centers, how he talked about our credentials was on an even more fundamental level than our personal narrative. That the driving force behind any moment's thinking is somehow a desire to prove something. And not just to prove our value or where we fit in with other people, but actually we're doing something even more subtle. That we are trying to confirm that we actually exist. So you can think about our credentials in terms of layers. There's the level that we witnessed last night of credentialing or lack of. And then there is how we relate with other people interpersonally in a work context or school context. And then there's how we relate with ourselves and how we judge ourselves and our value. And then there's this more subtle level of credential, which is what Trungpa Rinpoche is pointing to when he talks about meditation without credentials, and we'll go more into that, which is that we're actually, by having a personal narrative at all, we're trying to create something out of nothing. What? I don't exist? So this is the topic that we could get very theoretical about. We could talk about this idea called selflessness or egolessness. But we're going to talk about it very practically tonight in terms of how this principle leads to the meditation technique that we do in this tradition. But before we go there, I'm just curious. I want you to think about the conversation that you had with your neighbor. And I want you to just recall what questions, if any, did I ask my neighbor? What information did I reveal about myself? In the context of thinking about how we create a story to create a connection with other people. Did you judge yourself? Did you judge the other person based on what they said about themselves? So one of the things that we do in this tradition is that we get very curious about our experience. And not just how we conduct ourselves in terms of our meditation practice, but that we take our mindfulness practice into how we have conversations with other people, how we engage the world. Like, would it be okay if we didn't ask people what they do? If we didn't know anything about people's position in New York, in the center, how would it be to have a conversation where we weren't talking about our achievements, what we're doing? So to start to think about, how do I derive value? How do I derive my own value, the value I see in other people, based on how I do a simple thing like introduce myself? And here, the idea is more about being curious and open rather than saying, oh, I did that wrong. I shouldn't try to position myself and talk about where I come from or what I do. So meditation practice without credentials. And meditation and mindfulness is very popular these days, which is good. It's good and it's a challenge at the same time. And the challenge is that people come with all sorts of ideas about what mindfulness practice is, what meditation practice is about, what they should be getting out of it. So I thought I would start with a quote from Trungpa Rinpoche. Every once in a while, I like to have references to just prove that we're not just making this up. It does come from somewhere. So this book, The Myth of Freedom, it's a compilation of lectures that Trungpa Rinpoche gave in the early 70s when meditation was really just newly being introduced to Westerners. And there was a lot of desire for radical transformation. So Trungpa Rinpoche was coming into a scene where people were very hungry to shed where they came from and their Western perspective and to kind of take on an Eastern way of being. And so in this book he talks a lot about this idea of credentials and how we have these ideas and these narrative about ourselves that we bring to our meditation practice. So these are his comments in regard to sitting practice. We must be willing to be completely ordinary people, which means accepting ourselves as we are, without trying to become greater, purer, more spiritual, more insightful. If we can accept our imperfections as they are, quite ordinarily, then we can use them as part of our path. But if we try to get rid of our imperfections, then they will be enemies, obstacles on the road to our self-improvement. And the same is true for the breath. If we can see it as it is, without trying to use it to improve ourselves, then it becomes a part of the path because we are no longer using it as a tool of our personal ambition. Isn't our personal ambition what got us here tonight? It's an interesting paradox that he's presenting. Because we all, to some degree, come here because there's something that we don't feel is right in our lives or in our minds, or we're confused or sad or want more peacefulness, calm, bliss. And yet, the view he's presenting here in this passage is one where we have to embrace ourselves just as we are, which would include all the imperfections that we're hoping meditation will fix, in order to be on this path, to be on the path of meditation. So what are we doing in the technique? I always come back to the technique, because if we don't know what we're doing on the cushion, chances are we'll absolutely stop practicing. So what do? We take good posture. We have a soft gaze. And we tell ourselves to follow the breath, the ordinary breath as it goes in and out. And then when thoughts arise, label them thinking and return to the breath. Okay, sounds simple enough. Okay, but what happens? What happens when you apply that instruction to yourself? And anybody can just shout out anything. What happens when you try to do that? You think you're doing it wrong. Yeah, isn't that funny? That's usually one of the first thoughts. Like, I don't think I'm doing this right. Okay, so doubt arises about our ability to do the technique. Mm-hmm. And what else happens? You get frustrated with yourself for having thoughts. Right. Right, so we already have this fantasy that the thoughts should just not be there. Or they should just immediately evaporate. Okay, what else happens? Say that again? You might fall asleep. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do when you wake up? Do you... So you have a slightly startled look on your face, like, whoa, I think I was supposed to be doing something else there. Yeah, and then we usually give ourselves a hard time for having fallen asleep, right? We don't just go, oh, that's okay. Back to the technique. What else happens? We get carried away and lost in thought. Right? Really easily. It's like, wow, all the time. Yeah, I have no control. Mm-hmm. And what else happens?
Get bored.
Uh-huh. And how, what do we do with the boredom? How do we label the boredom? That's enough for today. That's right. This TV show has lost its entertainment value. Mm-hmm. Get carried away with noticing your posture and correcting it. Uh-huh. You start tinkering. Uh-huh. Get too tight. Your back starts to hurt. Mm-hmm. And what do you do with that? Uh-huh. Keep noticing the pain over and over and say, this is torture. Right. Yeah. Why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like a pretty simple thing, meditation instruction. And we definitely usually have some preconceived idea that it's going to do something for us, right? I mean, that's usually why we engage in anything that takes effort, is we think, well, it's going to do something for me. Mm-hmm. And there is that interesting thing, right, where you're supposed to label thoughts, thinking, and return to the breath, if we can. But then it gets stolen away, right, very quickly. I was once on a month-long meditation retreat. So this is, they're not as common anymore, but back in the day, as they say, like 20 years ago, people did, this was sort of part of the Shambhala tradition, is that at some point you do a month-long sitting meditation. And you just sit, you do meditation practice and walk in meditation, you eat in meditation like 10 hours a day. And I remember the end of like one day, long day, and I'm in the bathroom and I'm brushing my teeth, and then I see the toothpaste there and I start reading it, and I'm so interested in all the words on that label, and I'm like, okay, what is up? To some degree, the challenge of meditation practice is that it flies in the face of our natural inclination towards being entertained, engaged in something. Even if it's like the toothpaste label. Desperate. So Trungpa Rinpoche talks about the sign that a meditator is giving up their credentials as the practice becoming boring. That's a good sign that you experience boredom when you're meditating. I'm going to read you another quote. This is one of the original publications from 1976, and I opened it the other day, and just all the glue just started pouring out of it. So this is his description of meditation practice. There is no promise of love and light or visions of any kind. No angels, no devils, nothing happens. It is absolutely boring. Sometimes you feel silly. One often asks the question, who is kidding whom? Am I on something or not? You are not on something. You are not onto something. Traveling the path means you get off everything. There is no place to perch. sit and feel your breath. Be with it. Then you begin to realize that actually the slitting of the artery did not take place when you were introduced to the practice. The actual slitting takes place when you begin to feel the boredom of the practice, real boredom. I'm supposed to get something out of Buddhism and meditation. I'm supposed to attain different levels of realization. I haven't. I'm bored stiff. Even your watcher is unsympathetic to you, begins to mock you. Boredom is important because boredom is anti-credential. Credentials are entertaining, always bringing you something new, something lively, something fantastic, all kinds of solutions. When you take away the idea of credentials, then there is boredom. Okay, so in our ordinary lives, our regular everyday lives, we spend most of our time trying to build up our credentials, right? We like want a good resume. We want to be sane, healthy, wholesome people. We want to think well of ourselves, have a good diet, do all the right things. We want to talk to ourselves in a way that's positive and encouraging, right? We want to have a good story that we tell ourselves. We're all like that. And we love entertainment, right? We love going to the movies. We love hearing gossip. We love exploring things through our sense perceptions, art, and poetry, and music, and food. And what is the value in boredom? Right? It's like death. So, absolutely, right? We get up. Something's boring, we just get up and leave. And that seems like a smart thing to do in our everyday lives. So then we're sitting here in this hall, and you're being presented with the exact opposite. Give up your personal narrative. Label it thinking. Come back to the breath if you can. Give up entertainment. Even the idea that you're going to get something from your meditation practice is considered entertainment when you're on the cushion. And embrace boredom. Mind-numbing. Nothing's going to change. Maybe they'll ring the gong, maybe they won't. Okay, so now it's your job to explain to me why we have two very different instructions. Right? Why we live in the world of creating a narrative and having entertainment and getting away from boredom. And why, when we're sitting on the meditation cushion, it's a good idea, it's intelligent, it's valuable, it's useful to give up your personal story, to give up trying to be entertained, trying to ward off boredom. Well, how can this be so? So the reason I pose this to you, and then we're going to have a microphone that goes around and we're going to talk about it, is because This is really your own personal understanding of why those three things, which are the kind of the opposite of how we're motivated in our daily lives, why that makes sense to you. Because without that, you're most likely, going to stop meditating. Because it will eventually get boring if you're doing it right. You'll be disappointed. The solidness of your sense of personal self gets little like chinks in it. So where is the value? If we're going for those three things, having no credential, no story of me that makes me of value, including like wretchedness, right? Because that's a way we could have value, right? As someone who is really screwed up. Where is the value if we give up all these things? What becomes valuable? What's left? Oh, good, we have a hand.
What I've experienced is that after boredom, it's just pure experience. And that actually is kind of entertaining. So actually, after boredom comes a certain type of entertainment, but it's not based upon your idea of controlling what's happening, but more like other things are happening to you. Like, oh, I'm noticing the patterns on her shirt, you know, or I'm noticing other things that when I was stuck in my own little story, I wasn't able to see and experience. So I think the reason why I practice is because it creates the space so that I can experience more and let other things in, kind of besides the like fixed experience that I have when I'm not doing that.
That's interesting phrase, lets other things in. Thank you.
For me, this experience of meditating kind of revolves around the idea of this narrative being the source of a lot of my issues, not all of them. And I think we create this narrative, and as we all recognize in Shambhala and any kind of meditative course, we recognize that...
I'm having a hard time hearing you. Can you...
Sorry.
Oh, perfect.
There we go. Apologize.
No worries.
So I recognize, and I think we all do, that in many meditative practice, we agree that the problems we face are those that are created by our own minds. And by our own minds, we mean ourselves. And by that, we also mean through the narratives we create, we give ourselves these troubles that we have to overcome, and it gives us a frustration to go with that. And then when I come to meditation, it introduces this loss of all the credentials, this loss of the narrative, and thus it dissolves us of the foundations through which we create the issues that we face on a day-to-day basis. And one other way I look at it is, in that narrative, the deepest question we always seek is to find meaning. Why? What does this mean to me? What am I doing? And I think I've spent a lot of my life trying to answer those questions, but I think the real answer is that I need to stop asking that question, because there really isn't an answer. I can answer that question however I want, whenever I want, and change the answer whenever I want. It's something I create. It's a problem I create on my own. So I don't... And I think that's basically what boredom does for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's this gentleman, and then that phrase, it's a problem we create on our own. That's a...
I think the narrative that we have for ourselves, more often than not, is not the real who we really are. It's more like a marketing thing, who we think we should be. And what I find useful with meditation is by observing what types of thoughts I have, I gain insights about who I am, not who I present to be. So I think that in and of itself gives a lot of insights that we wouldn't otherwise have about who we are. The other thing is, it could be boring, as you said, but at the end of the day, it feels more clear, like the mind feels clearer. There's more clarity and a higher level of observing things around you, which I think also in and of itself is very useful.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are definitely some side effects of meditation practice, right? Clarity. What was the other one you said?
Better awareness of who we really are.
Better awareness of who we are. Mm-hmm. But then if we have a meditation session where we like get up off the cushion and we just feel like, totally confused, did the meditation not work? Was it a bad meditation session? What do you think?
I had my hand up, but I guess I'll try and answer your new question, which is really hard. It's going to probably sound good, but it's so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if I have a meditation session that's, like, say you mentioned, oh, we could fall asleep on the cushion, and that never feels really good because it feels like, oh, I'm doing it wrong. I'm supposed to be awake.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was tired. You know, it helps to accept where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm angry and I could just be with that anger or whatever comes up, much easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to thank you for the topic of credentials. It's just so apropos because I'm in school, so I'm working on a credential, and then when I'm done with school, I'm going to be working on another credential, and it's just... I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, soon I'm going to have all these letters after my name. And in a way, it's just, it's kind of silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and academic environments are very, very into their credentials, right? They're, like, heavy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm recently getting back into meditating after not doing it for a while because I couldn't find the time in my first year back in school, but my internship, I guess that's a credential, not a particularly fancy one, requires me to go to a psychiatric unit every day, well, 4 days a week, and I figure if I meditate, then I can show up and, I don't know, be more present for for whatever wild experience might be before me.
You might be very interested in a book by Dr. Edward Podvil. He was a psychiatrist. He died of cancer about 10 years ago, but he worked with Trungpa Rinpoche on creating the contemplative psychotherapy master's program at Naropa University. And he wrote a book, if you Google Podvil, you will find it. They renamed it, so I'm not sure what the current name of the book is. But it's all about how to look at psychoses and mental illness from the point of view of basic health. And he talks about a practice called basic attendance, how to be with people who are in various stages of psychoses or dissociation. You might find it very interesting.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And if you don't mind me just finishing with this idea of credential, then maybe there's in this environment the anti-credentials, like schizophrenia. We used to say schizophrenics, but that's politically incorrect. But person with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or not otherwise specified. Like, we don't know what's up with this person, but here they are. And, like, you know, I feel like if we get too caught up with that, we can oversee the basic humanness. Mm-hmm. which sometimes can be really hard to see. But I feel like meditation can. I'd like to think that meditation helps.
And why do you think? Like, go trust yourself in that answer. Like, yeah, why is it that meditation helps to see beyond the labels that we place on people?
What, based on my own experience outside of that environment, it's interesting because we're talking about our own narratives. I've found I get caught up in my narrative about you, you know, or other people, like, and usually it's anxiety based, like, oh, I'm gonna go to this thing today and so and so is gonna be there and they're gonna be like this and that and the other thing, and I get all worked up, my day's ruined, and then they're not even there, or they're there and they're completely different. Mm-hmm. So that is, and I've worked with that on the cushion, like, you don't know what's gonna happen today with myself or with anyone else. So how do I know what these patients are going to be like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
This gentleman here.
I went on this 10-day meditation, and it was pretty awful the first 4 days. And then the 9th and 10th day, they put me in a thing called a pagoda, which was basically a closet. I said, well, how am I going to do this? You know, I'm pretty not into, have a hard time with elevators sometimes. And it ended up being like very silent. And it was the silence. And that's what it, you know, there was nothing. There was no certification. It was just this like really incredible silence in the closet. So, I always feel that's, after a lot of painful kind of anxiety through this thing, I came to this like incredible silence, which was very peaceful.
Thank you.
This has been very interesting, and I sort of have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll make the statement, which is I must be doing it wrong because no one has said yet that after the initial anxiety that this is going to go on forever and it's going to be boring,
mm-hmm.
it becomes very relaxing mm. in different levels of relaxation. And I've identified 3 or 4 different levels, and they come and go. But I just haven't heard anybody else talk about the relaxation aspect of it. Also, to talk about this gentleman's question, I have found that with the biggest questions, the ontological questions, they don't get answered. They just go away.
Mm. Yes.
I have had more positive experience than negative experience during my meditation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot for talking. And I really liked how you tied credentials with boring. I've been talking with, for the past year, I've been talking with some spiritual friends about taking my practice into the city, as in when I'm walking or I'm out. And so last night, this is perfect about boring because you kind of really validated something. So I go to the F train on 6th and 14th Street. And this always happens right after I swipe my card and I enter the platform area. There's this immediate expectation, like I'm going to see someone I know and they're going to wave, you know, and then I'm going to feel kind of at home. But, you know, that never happens. And so I go into the platform and it's hot and it's nasty and dirty. And my first thing that I do is I reach for my cell phone. And I catch myself last night, and I said, oh, you know what? I'm going to be in the F train platform tonight. This is what I tell myself. So, I leave the cell phone, and I look at all the other people on their cell phone, and I look at them enviously, you know, because they don't have to be here. And so I start walking down the platform really slow. But you know what I realize is I start to get really relaxed immediately. I'm very relaxed. You know, I notice some guy who's watching a TV show really loud on his cell phone. Some girl is going up and down the platform. She's really impatient. This is 20 minutes. This is my 20-minute meditation for the day. It's my walking meditation. Mm-hmm. I'm there, you know. And I notice how dirty the tiles are. You know, I have a memory of a lot of the people that were on that platform last night. I get on the F train. Finally, it comes. And I'm thinking, all right, I did my work. I'm going to get on my cell phone. And I look around, and, you know, like half the people are on their cell phone. You know, and then the other half are actually just sitting there. And this story does not have any happy ending. Because I was bored, and there was periods of a lot of anger while I was sitting through all this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I took the train, and that's it. There's nothing mm-hmm. else. I just remember a lot that happened mm-hmm. last night, and because I was there. I was there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this makes any sense, but this is part of what I practice spiritually, you know? So anyway, thank you. It was boring. It's boring.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very vivid.
I think for me, it's more of something about detachment. I think sometimes we talk about letting go. We know that material possessions don't give us happiness. We know that other people won't give us happiness or a job won't give us happiness. And talking about our own personal narrative of mm-hmm. who we are, mm-hmm. or what we think we are, it also will not give us happiness. So the more I detach from whatever my idea of myself, the more at peace I am, or happier, if we can call it that. I don't even call it happy. It's just neutral. Mm-hmm. I don't feel bored or bad. It just is. And I think initially I remember thinking about, like, wow, I'm thinking too much. And now it's okay. Sometimes I think too much. Sometimes I feel bored. But the more I let go of whatever I think I am, and then I just start realizing it just is, it just neutral, I think there's something about that that I can take to other places. And I think that's the value that I get that carries itself to all sorts of situations, including my own narrative.
Great.
Going back to your original question and the stories that you were telling, my outlook on stimulation in the environment is always connected, although sometimes we get away from it, social, relating to other people. Now phones have kind of lost that part of it. But a lot of people that I talk to who have never practiced meditation, and I'm very new to it, would just rather be on the phone with someone or talking with someone or doing something. And I definitely used to be and still am one of those people that just constantly needs to be doing something and active. But since I started meditation, I have similar experiences on the subways and with the toothpaste. I would find myself, if I was on the subway and I didn't have my phone or I didn't have music, whatever it was, I would look at one of the advertisements and I would just hyper-focus on the words, or, you know, oh, that person's teeth, they must have whitened them, and, you know, and I would just find things to zero in on, and it was so stressful. Mm-hmm. And now I'm able to just be on the subway or walking around, and I don't get stressed if someone bumps into me or if I have to wait in a crowd at a light. Just being there is amazing, and it has helped me so much in my socializing. I'm able to more concentrate on what the people are saying instead of, you know, what am I going to do next? What am I going to talk about next? Just being present in the moment, and it's been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can't really see you, but I can hear you.
I trust you're out there.
My thought is just really short. I think the reason why we're meant on the path to drop the sense of self is because if you have no fixed sense of self, then there's no other. You drop everything that's different between you or me and this pillow. And so by backing away from the narrative or who you think you are or who you think you should be and just drop all of that, then there is no other. And I think that that's why I'm on the path, because I think that our world is in bad shape because of the definitions that we create. I'm me, mm-hmm. you're you, that's blue, that's red, who cares? If you don't have a sense of self, if you're brave enough to face that, then there is no other, and then we've got real work to do, and I think only then is the real work possible. And that's why I don't really get bored. I get frustrated with myself, but I don't find boredom in it. I just find a moment of relief that a lot of other people have described. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
When you first asked the question, my mind was running with things to say, because I like these sorts of Q&As and like coming up with a clever thing to say. But nothing really stood out for a while. And that's because deep down, I don't have a clear answer to that, because mm-hmm. often while practicing the perspective of meditation, which is to be aware, present, and accepting of both painful and pleasant sensations and states of mind, it's excruciating often. You know, it's very painful, and I actually find myself often saying, like, why am I paying attention to this? You know, you're like this is terrible, you know? It's like, it's awful. But on the bright side, I have experienced glimpses of a spaciousness and openness that is just something special in the relative sense to, you know, day-to-day life. And that's not only like a special kind of pleasure, but even, you know, these little moments of accepting pain, and it can be very relaxing and very captivating. So that's why I keep doing it.
Thank you. Yes, this will be our last.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could comment yourself on Trungpa's idea that when you're meditating, you're making friends with yourself. The idea of being finding a friend for yourself, and maybe uncovering a sense of love. Imagine that. But I was wondering if you could just comment, maybe a few words on this idea of making friends with yourself in the context of what you're talking mm-hmm. about.
I think you said it nicely, but I'll add a note or two. Well, that's really the question that we're all scared to ask, which is, you know, if we give up our personal narrative, even if it's like just in the moment that we label thoughts thinking, right? We're sort of letting go of that grasp of who we are. It can be a very, in a subtle way, it can be a very terrifying test that we're actually taking. Like, what will we find when we let go? And thank you for saying, you know, about the funny thing about sitting with pain is that it's not just dangling there. Interestingly enough, there's some way in which we meet our pain. Here's where language gets a little tricky, right? Because we're talking about an immediate experience. But we have to use words, so, you know, we try. Right? Where the quality of making friends with yourself is in that moment having the thought, well, maybe I don't have to reject my pain. So that would imply that there's something wholesome there. There's some intelligence or resource or love or something that would make it so that we don't have to stop pushing away the pain or trying to get rid of it. And then something else happens. So the Shambhala training that Georgia mentioned, level one used to be called ordinary magic. And I think the combination of your comment and then this gentleman's question sort of speaks to that, something magical that happens when we just allow ourselves and trust ourselves to be with whatever's here in our immediate experience. Did you want to add a last hurrah?
I just wondered with the narrative that you talk about, and you know the ego mind self perceived interdependency.
Say that again, the ego mind.
The ego mind self perceived interdependency is so convincing. You know, we believe it's so real. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even, you know, Western writers like Huxley said that it's the soul's desire to transcend self-conscious selfhood. You know, and so that story about who we are is, I've just noticed the more holes I'd see in it through practicing. I just wonder, is it's necessary in society to move through society because other people's egos are interacting with your ego. But I just wondered, is the more you practice, do you understand how to work with it rather than, you know, just think it's going to go away? And maybe there's not an answer to that question, but.
Well, my favorite definition of ego is that it's a lie. It's a lie that's taking place in any given moment. It's a mistake. Maybe that's even a more gentle way of talking about ego. It's the narrative and the belief that we have to constantly generate credentials, the story of who I am, which therefore makes me valuable. It turns out we could just give that up. And that's what we're testing, that hypothesis, when we practice meditation. What will happen if I give up this ego, the narrative, credentials? What will happen to me? Will I dissolve? Will I become a human vegetable? Will I give up all personal ambition and just sit on the couch all day? What will happen to me? And then, of course, there's the second part, which is, well, but there is this sense of me, and this sense of me is what gets me to the meditation cushion and interacts with the people in the world, so it is happening. So then that's the path, right? Is the struggle between the moment-to-moment experience in meditation of letting go, labeling thoughts, thinking, and just resting our attention on the breath as it happens, not trying to create anything, do anything, but just be. And then there's also the, okay, well, then we get up for the meditation cushion, and, you know, I got my kid, and I got to go pick her up, and I got a job, and I got, right? We have our whole story that happens, right? And that's the path, is how do those two fit together? Thank you all for coming out and sitting. Keep practicing. Don't give up.
Thanks, Natalie. Hey, visit us at ny.shambhala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. Check out Shambhala Training Weekend 1 with Ethan and David Nickturn the weekend of January 13th. Come visit our weekly Dharma gathering, live and in person. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up and tell your friends about the podcast. You can always email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, suggestions, comments, and a full list of your credentials if you feel so inspired. Hey, thanks again for listening, and breathe, relax, it's all good. Later.